From KQED Public Radio and the California Report, this is the Capital Notes podcast for Friday, March 23rd. I'm John Myers from KQED. I thought I was going to say something smart, alecky, and then I decided not to. That's the only time I have censored myself. Anthony York from the Los Angeles Times and Marisa Lagos from the San Francisco Chronicle, both miraculously here at the same time.
It is miraculous. Do-do-do-do.
The aligning of the planets for this podcast.
It's because we're going to miss you, even though you're not really going anywhere.
Yeah. But. So this is, at the end, I'll have a moment where I explain this, but this is the last Capital Notes podcast for a while. I will not say it's the last one because my good friends at KQED will do something different, but I will not.
It's the last one I'm doing.
that will cause ripples all the way through the mighty city by the bay.
Sure.
Anyway, we'll talk about that in a minute. So let's talk about politics.
Yeah.
Anthony has to turn off his iPhone here first.
Okay.
There have been times where the crickets have chirped in here.
Now it's just tweets from the governor.
So, well, tell us what he's
saying. What is he saying? Something. Maybe it's something we can talk about.
No. It's not.
Oh, I see. It's just one of those private conversations you have.
Right. No, it's all on your Twitter feed. It's nothing worth discussing.
So here we are at the end of the week. I think we just concluded before the podcast started that there's not a lot of new news. That's never stopped us.
Well, no, except a very speedy title and summary for the governor's new initiative.
Which happened after last week's podcast.
It was like magic.
Only different.
Only.
It was less than 48 hours later. The governor's initiative hit the streets. I hear that it's, what, $3 a signature?
What
it's
a deal.
The latest going deal for the...
Where do I sign?
Jerry Brown Tax
2.0. Wait, no. They don't pay you for signing.
Now, they still have...
I don't know. I was told by people it might cost as much as $7 million, which is way more than $3 a signature.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, but that could be toward by the... You get toward the
That's
end.
That's true. That's everything.
It depends on how it pushes.
But let's put it this way. The signature gatherers are making out well this year.
They are. It's a good year to be one. And to be fair, too... The hard thing about projecting how much it's going to cost is how many days you had on the street. I mean, he picked up, I would say, probably 2 weeks of time by getting that sucker out on over the weekend. So, like, maybe he has 6 weeks instead of 30 days or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The Secretary of State has said if you want to make sure you make the ballot, get it in by April 20th. But, you know, but then, of course, the inevitable, as I ran into our Secretary of State in Santa Cruz, of all places, this weekend.
Ouch.
And
ran into?
I know. Ouch. Yes.
Man walks into a bar.
I
ouch.
Gotcha.
Please,
I'm with
ahead.
You. I'm trying to work past
it,
John.
We're trying to keep going.
This is the last time,
baby. He's punchy, people. Watch out.
This is the last time, baby. I got to, like, try to divert you a couple of times.
Anyway, she was saying that, you know, every governor, they always call and ask, so when's the real deadline, right? And
which is what we ask. Our reporters always ask.
When's the real deadline?
Can I just say, I find it a little opaque or ridiculous or pick an adjective. There's no answer to that. Like,
well, the answer is, I think her stock answer is it depends on how many laws you want to waive.
And it also depends, too, though. But I think one of the reasons it's opaque is it depends on the actions of 58 county elections officials.
Right.
And the U.S. Postal Service.
But also, too, I mean, how fast can they process the signatures? How many people do they have on hand? How many signatures came from each county? I mean, you know, like
okay,
we
but
see.
This makes my job really hard, and what? I just want to say to all you elected officials out there.
A slight bit of complaining from Marisa.
Only in the name of transparency and consistent democracy.
So I guess my concern isn't just my job, because, you know, I would never complain about that. It's that it's confusing to voters.
Let's move forward on this point.
I'm all about the people, okay?
And talk about the original Brown Initiative 1.0 is out there as an insurance policy.
Apparently so. Yeah.
Money has to be gathered. We haven't really seen any new dramatic amounts of money raised in the last week, but it's still early. You got a sense, Anthony, you're kind of shaking your head around.
No, I mean, there's some more oil money. I think you blogged about it. Right?
Yeah, but you hear some, I was going to say maybe you heard more money coming down the pike.
Well, the governor himself said that Occidental Petroleum was doubling down on that. You know, after I guess he called all of his donors that gave to the original initiative to make sure that they didn't want a refund. And
I'm sure that's the way he put it.
He talked
too.
It right. And he talked about his conversation with an exec at Occidental Petroleum, which had given, I believe, $250,000 to the campaign.
Is yeah, they're right? just stoked this isn't an oil severance tax.
Right. So they're gonna come in with even more, the governor says.
And the millionaires campaign said they were pulling their gatherers from the streets. So
yeah, that did happen this week. They made it official that they're pulling the initiative for good. They believe they've got the right assurances,
whatever that means, because I mean I think the wording of their announcement was interesting to me because they said, you know, we've been assured by the governor this will make the ballot. Well, as we just discussed, that's not all really entirely up to the governor. Right. But and then, you know, on that same day as they were saying that, there was a couple of student rallies across the state saying, you know, we're not on board with this, which I mean, I think it remains to be seen how big of an impact that could have. But it's certainly, you know, the power of the millionaire's tax before was this branding. And you know, if they're having some of their sort of coalition members fall away, it'll be fascinating to see how that shapes up and whether they try to really brand this the same way. I mean, I don't know how long we can go on calling this a compromise tax measure before my editors just get angry at me.
Well, and it's because and because compromise, a compromise internally inside of the Democratic side of the world,
right.
which
right.
I know George Skelton wrote about this week too. I mean, it's not a compromise in the real political sense of the word.
Whose iPhone's going off now, buddy?
That was mine.
I mean, let's be clear here. I think that's a really, like, I'm not saying Skelton's column was, but the Republican response to this, that this is what compromise. I mean, they were never going for taxes in the first place. That's the whole reason this is going to the ballot in 2012. So I think and then there was all this concern from CFT that they would be accused of making a backroom deal. What other kind of deal is there for a ballot initiative? I mean, how often do people...
And where's the front room when there's a backroom?
Yeah,
I don't want to go there.
Like, but the independent campaigns, I mean, what are they going to have a legislative hearing on the matter? Like, I just... There's a lot of things to criticize on this, and I think that focusing on that part is a little misguided. That's my rant. I'll stop.
I like that. the governor also told reporters earlier this week that what he had, maybe his wife, First Lady Ann Brown, had an email exchange
with Molly Munger.
She was very nice.
The story that I did on Ms. Munger ran this week, finally. We talked a few weeks ago. It was cordial or something.
Is that nuanced.
Was very nice,
nuanced.
I believe. He
it was
said,
nuanced.
Yeah. He sent Ann a nice email. Yes. So apparently there wasn't a screaming match like Anne was accused of last year.
But I think that discussion...
a lot of exclamation points.
You guys tell me. I don't get any sense that discussion... There's anything else to have in that discussion.
No.
That discussion
no.
is over.
No. And she
Munger
poured
has,
how much money in the past couple
well,
weeks
she's,
back
she's
in?
Total, she's a little over $3.5 million. And, of course, she's been out on the street for a while for signatures, and that'll keep going. But there's really nothing else to talk about. I mean, she has said she would, if needed, independently finance herself the entire campaign,
right.
a $30 million statewide
and
campaign.
And she might have to.
Good luck.
But my point is, in which case, there's really nothing to discuss with the governor.
No.
Well, look,
his chances are okay.
Yeah, he believes his chances are okay, and he believes that the Munger initiative will die of its own weight.
The ballot box or before.
Yeah, well, the polling shows it consistently in the high 30s, low 40s. And it remains to be seen. I mean, if those numbers don't move here in the next few weeks, we'll see if Munger is actually going to write herself that $30 million check to push this thing. It doesn't smell like a winning proposition to me from where I'm sitting at this point, unless the narrative on this one radically changes. And I think
I do know
the governor seems willing and ready to take his chances going up, you know, with Munger on the ballot alongside him.
Yeah, and I do know in the meantime that, you know, she's reaching out to Democratic consultant types and trying to get them on her side, which. We're not going to give free advice here, but it would be fascinating to see if anybody.
I was going to say that her campaign did put out an ad this week. I mean, I think it was on cable in some markets, but it was really an internet ad. I think, you know, you float out there to get some free press attention.
Yes.
But it had a narrative in it that I said last week. I think it's an interesting one. I think it's a hard one to make in the cacophony of a November campaign with all of these other things going on. But she's out there early making the narrative. This is the only one that truly funds education in X, Y, and Z way. And I think that is the one place. I mean, we talked about this. The governor's plan is complicated. It's harder to sell. It's not bumper sticker slogan-esque.
No, but it has.
And so that doesn't mean it won't win, but it's it, it is susceptible to that kind of, you know, well, yours is
yeah.
part of
no,
that,
yeah,
that,
yeah.
that complicated budget mess in Sacramento. Mine is simple. We raise
there
the
is,
taxes, we give it to
look,
the school.
There's a House of Cards feel to the governor's initiative. It's a very carefully constructed initiative, but it's very fragile.
Is it glued together or is
no,
it just
no,
leaning together?
Like, not only is it just leaning together, but there's a fan on in the corner.
Yeah, right.
So, nice.
So, no, but I mean also.
That's a radio moment, by the way. That was very good description. Yes.
But on top, you know, and I totally agree with you guys, but I would also say that he also has a much larger coalition behind him. And so while everyone loves education, if you talk to, you know, one of those like 99% of people, not in an Occupy sense, but in a polling sense, that want to fund education, I'd bet 10% of them also want to fund, you know, welfare and adult day health care programs. And 10% of them also really care about, you know, these other programs that have suffered deep cuts. So there's an ability to reach out to a network with his that, yes, education touches everybody. But I think that if they kind of can play it right, they can have that, you know, sort of grassroots appeal within different communities.
Well, and if you read the language, and the governor himself sort of tried to have it both ways this week, you read the language on his initiative, and it says 89% of all the new money goes to K-12, and the other 11% goes to community colleges, that it all goes to schools. And then he
Which
had this—
Which is not 100% inaccurate. It's just not the whole story.
Well, but then he simultaneously critiqued the other initiative for not being drafted. He had some term of art on Tuesday in the, you know, in the context of the architecture of the state budget.
Oh, yes, yes. He's been talking about this
like
a lot,
that.
Yeah.
So yes, 100% of the new money goes to schools,
but we're
at the
also
same
protecting
time,
everything
take some
else.
Of the, some of the old money to fund health and welfare.
Well, I don't think that's the craziest. I mean, it's not that complicated, right? If you say that, I mean, if you say it that way, if you say we're putting new money to schools and we're taking the money we would have spent and funding other stuff, I mean, that's the simplest way to sell it.
So, but let's look forward here for a moment, and in one sense, because this podcast will have to hold for a little bit. But
good luck with that.
Yeah, I know we're coming back to all of that that fun goodbye-ness. But looking forward to the governor's effort over the next several weeks, I mean he's got to raise money. But I mean, what do you think? It's really coalition building right now, right? I mean he's got to. I mean because and I look at this, I look at this because in and I try to compare it to a Schwarzenegger campaign, which is not fair. Because Schwarzenegger and Brown, very different people in a lot of ways.
No.
But we know what Schwarzenegger would have done. It would have been the barnstorming the state, the photo ops, the events, the, you know, the Klieg lights. And maybe that's also, too, when you get closer to November. We're still a ways out.
Right.
But the Schwarzenegger strategy of selling something was fairly understandable after all those years. Brown is not that kind of guy. He's not going to get that kind of attention. So what does he do? Is this a matter of getting more police, firefighters, nurses, business in some way, shape, or form? I mean, this is a coalition period now for the governor, right?
And look at his last election. I mean, look at the way.
Yeah.
I think what he's going to do is exactly what you're saying. He's going to raise as much money as he can, build a coalition, count his pennies until
he
absolutely feels that he needs to spend them.
The point being, he doesn't need to be out there himself.
We have another election before.
I don't know. I mean, I think that you're going to see any number of surrogates come in support of this thing. Some high profile Democrats and Republicans, along with the teachers, firefighters, you know, cops that we've all grown accustomed to.
High profile Republicans, you say?
Yeah. Yeah, I would. Would it shock you to see Pete Wilson or Arnold Schwarzenegger in an ad for one of these things? George Schultz. I mean,
assuming
I don't know. California
actually,
high-profile Republican. Maybe that's a contradiction.
But assuming that actually helped the cause. Does Schwarzenegger help the cause? I mean, I'm not. And
well,
we're not,
I mean,
and,
I don't.
I mean,
you
that's
know,
a good
we're,
question.
If they're all sitting there together, I mean, I don't know. I'm
the
great
beards of California.
They don't pay me enough.
Maybe not though, because if you talk to the pollsters about what you know, like, back to we've discussed this. You know, multiple times is that, you know, the independent bloc is who matters here, right? Because most Republicans are already saying, heck no, we're not going to support this. And most Democrats are pretty much convinced. So does having your sort, you know, and the independents are the ones who really don't like the political parties. They don't like your sort of regular politics as usual. So I don't know. Does a business, you know, does business help more on that?
She said moron. And the other thing is I'm not sure that Brown himself – and this was an issue in 2009, right? But I'm not sure that Brown himself is necessarily the best spokesman. I mean, yes, he's more popular than a lot of other politicians in the state, most other politicians in the state. His approval ratings are still about 45 to 50%. I mean, that's not exactly the kind of
50,
off the charts,
yeah.
off the charts popularity that's going to get out and build a case.
So who
Kim
does?
Kim Kardashian.
So
there you go. Wow.
But so who does?
Zing.
Then?
Mark my words.
I think it's going to be a variety of people that will reflect the diversity of the coalition that Brown's built. I think you're going to see some of these, you know, everyday people, the teachers, the firefighters. I don't know. Are emergency room doctors the new firefighters now? Are they now the most You know, there will be a collection of surrogates. I think Brown will make the case himself, and I think some of those surrogates will be names we know, and others will just have, you know, uniforms for jobs for services that we all value.
And will he be, you know, relying, one of the big components of this that has nothing to do with, well, has something to do, but it's not the tax hike, is the constitutional protection for realignment funding. So do you see a lot of sort of local, you know, county soups, people like that, him sort of relying on them to convince their community? Because I do think that having that law enforcement angle does help in terms of getting folks who maybe are a little more conservative on the political spectrum to back this. So, you know, I want to go back. ER doctors as the new firefighters.
Well,
huh?
I don't know.
I like
that's
that.
That's another next podcast.
And
we'll
then I
want
to next podcast.
That's
oh, don't worry, don't
point
worry, John.
Are we going
Marisa
on hiatus?
And I are talking about
okay,
this.
Okay, you and Marisa are going on your own.
We're going rogue.
Nice. What I was going to say, but let me attach it to the budget too, because again, I am a little bit too mindful of trying to leave to put a podcast out here that can hold a little bit. I mean, but let's
the budget. I forgot about that.
Yeah, that rascally budget.
No,
thing.
I mean, I've been enjoying forgetting about it. But let's talk about where this,
you know, because here we are in this period of coalition building. That's at the same time the budget gets crafted. So we have revenues that come out in April. Let's just, you know, set the scene here for a moment. We get tax revenues in April here coming up in just a matter of days. We start doing our little clock of how much the state takes in every month. The books close in April. We have a May revised budget. Then we have June 15th, which we all think is, you know, got to be the date because you don't get paid if you're a legislator, if you don't pass it by the 15th. And all the while, you've got some very difficult decisions about cuts. And I still think you have an interesting discussion to have about the trigger cuts in particular, which goes back to the tax issue.
Yep.
I asked Daryl Steinberg about this in his weekly gaggle today, his press Q&A. And he still seems to believe that the governor's—
You mean yesterday?
Thursday, right.
Yeah.
I can't get that right after 6 years. But he still seemed to believe that the governor's not on the wrong path about education being that big of a share of those trigger cuts. But I throw all this on the table as a way of saying that all of that seems to not only impact the public perception, but the coalition building as well. And if the governor wants a big coalition, right, especially on the left, how do you craft a budget that doesn't tick off everybody on the left?
Especially as you watch the assembly in particular reject proposal after proposal to save money. I mean, they have turned back a number of his big money savers, which also, of course, happened to be the most controversial, the cuts to Cal Grants, to Cal Works. Let's not forget the animal shelter mandate. Everybody likes fuzzy animals.
Not the governor.
Huh?
Not the governor.
He only likes one.
No,
he,
right. Yeah.
Well, the rest of them, out of heck. But anyway.
But,
right, but you're right.
But, you know,
as
this is all happening, so I think that's the other thing to watch is how does Brown sort of react to these? I mean, he's sort of brushed them off as like, oh, this is just the beginning of the budget process. But if you talk to the assembly, they say, no, we are drawing a line in the sand. I mean, I think there's a little bit of truth on both sides of that.
In the sand, but very near the tide.
Well, sands are, you know, the sand.
Right. Well, and
they shift.
And so when you look forward to to all of that, the thing that comes to my mind is you look at the complexity of those cuts and the trigger cuts, and you look at the complexity of building a coalition and running a political campaign. And I have a hard time seeing how you don't end up with like revenue estimates that look much more optimistic like the governor's, right?
What?
I mean, you know, I don't want to like say that they're overly optimistic.
What are you
saying?
Well,
but
I
mean, because you live to fight another day on that. I mean,
right.
It seems like the worst thing that they could do for optics is to have a bitter, protracted fight about deep cuts that Democrats care about. They're not great for the public optics, but they're not good for coalition building optics.
I think something you said sort of speaks to this point is that the deadline for that fight to end is June 15th, mm-hmm. which means there are three, July, August, September, October, November, 5 months almost to rebuild whatever damage is done from that. So
mend any bridges that are burned because of the way the budget is structured.
Think about where these talks were 5 months ago.
And who knows what assurances happened behind closed doors. I mean, in the back room.
In the back room instead of the front room.
Not in the front room.
Or in the champagne room.
But I agree. I mean, I think it's a really hard line for Democratic lawmakers and the governor to walk because they have, you know, let's not forget the other backdrop here, which is, you know, the top two primary redistricting going into effect. I mean, there is a lot of uncertainty within those elections that are happening this year. And so I think, I mean, we've kind of touched on this in the past, but I think you're going to see some more pushback from individual lawmakers who maybe last year were just so happy to see a Democrat as governor that they kind of towed the line.
I will, however, throw one more monkey wrench out there that I don't know what would actually really happen. I guess by definition, a monkey wrench screws it all up. It may or may not. But let's not forget the public employee pension discussion.
Oh,
and let's
not
forget.
The Democrats would like to.
Yeah, well, exactly. But let's not forget that that is a thorny mess right now. And I would subscribe that, too.
Absolutely.
Because that's a tough bridge to mend if it doesn't go down exactly the way those on the left want.
And they have to do it.
They have to do something.
I'm
not sure.
Therein lies the question. What is it that they have to do? What kind of package of quote-unquote reform do they have to do?
They have to do something that makes it look like they did something so that voters aren't quite as pissed off as they are right now.
Yeah, but I'm not sure you're going to see anything on the – I mean, look, not only do unions have – not only are they expected to bankroll part of the governor's measure, but they've got the big paycheck measure on the ballot. And I think that even Brown is sensitive to – while he wants a pension – solution. He wants to go further than a lot of the unions are willing to go. I think politically, he understands that in the interest of keeping his coalition together, that some of the more heated parts of that debate might not happen until next year or the year after.
Mm-hmm. But again,
that's my guess.
I mean, you guys hear from the public. I think there is a lot of concern, anger, depending on who you're talking about on this issue. And I think that it's going to be a harder sell for the governor and his backers on this tax plan if they don't at least make some sort
They'll
of
do
effort.
Something.
I don't
something.
Know. I've seen all the polling and stuff I think that you're talking about. It has been back burner for so many weeks and months now. And I think that
but it's an easy thing for the opposition to seize.
It absolutely is, but that's assuming there's a well-formed, organized, vocal opposition. I mean, that's not just
funded.
The usual suspects, too.
But by the time you're wearing makeup, we'll be talking about this.
I mean, I'm wearing makeup
in the next few weeks.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that must be a good transition to get out of this, should it not?
Pivot.
Pivot to the end. And we're, 22 minutes into this podcast now? Is that long enough for the
6 years, 14 weeks.
So, in 2006, I endeavored on this quest of a podcast. It was 2006.
Because Kate Fulmar and I had too much time on our hands.
Yeah, exactly. And I coerced Anthony and another good friend of ours, a former reporter named Kate Fulmar, to come in to do it. Anthony stuck around for 6 years. Various other people were conned into coming in. And then Marisa Lagos got conned here toward the end and has been good enough to be a constant... reminder of sunniness. Didn't I call you optimistic one time? You were sunny.
Once you did.
Just once. And after that, you've just gone completely dark.
But I've been hanging out with you guys too much.
So, yeah, six years of these weekly podcasts, with the exception of a hiatus that we got a lot of grief for. That was your fault.
A baby's fault.
Well,
yeah, your baby.
Yeah,
your
blame
baby
it on the kid. Come on.
Always.
Blame it on your son.
Why else have children?
Yeah, right?
And so here we sit at what, at least for me, is the final Capital Notes podcast. In a week and a half, I start a new job. I'm leaving KQED, and I will be wearing makeup, as Anthony said, though apparently you don't wear as much anymore.
Oh.
Since I left television, they stopped wearing as much because the cameras got better.
Because HD.
Wouldn't that be the reason to wear more?
No, it's weird. It's
a less is more kind of frightening thing.
Yeah, good luck.
Exactly.
Good luck in HD.
So I'll be working as the political editor for the ABC affiliate in Sacramento, KXTV News 10. And I will, I'll be doing that. So the Capital Notes podcast is going to be in a hiatus mode as the good people at KQED find someone to wear my strangely shaped shoes here in the bureau.
It's because of your seven toes on your left foot.
There was something askew about
hard
me
to
always.
Fill in so many ways.
You know, mini, yes. Mini Toad Myers. That's what they called
that's
me.
Right.
No, not really. but anyway, so they are working hard at that. I do think they, you know, I can tell you that my, and I have to say a lot of thank yous really quickly to people at KQED because they've been really good at letting me experiment in a lot of these different forms of political journalism through the last few years. The podcast in particular with the distribution on iTunes and the distribution through National Public Radio. They were really good to let me do it. I just came to them and said, hey, I want to experiment, and they did it. They are committed to continuing to do these things, so stay tuned for a new person who will sit here and wax poetically with smart political reporters about the day's events.
He called us smart.
Well, maybe it'd be somebody else. Maybe they would be the smart ones. Maybe I should have done that.
I'm going to take the compliment.
But all of you who listen to this, I mean, you are some really rabid, wacky political junkies. I've been impressed that people actually listen. But more than that, I've actually really impressed that people listen. No, because, I mean, you know, you think about it. I mean,
they don't just listen. They, like, engage.
They do. And I kind of think that we're the only people that are interested in this. But, I mean, there have been, you know, by different counts,
silent,
different...
silent minority of
different
people.
Counts of different months, you know, thousands of downloads.
Ooh,
maybe it's actually just my mother downloading it, like, you know, 1,400 times.
You never
back
told
east.
Me that. No, just kidding. Yeah,
well, hey, you know, it's a huge audience. But they're very dedicated. Audience, and I'm very appreciative to them. And don't worry, it won't all go away. And I'll still be doing other stuff. You can find me on Twitter, but you can find all of the good KQED stuff. You can find Anthony, you can find Marisa, M. Lagos on Twitter over here, Anthony York, LAT on Twitter over here.
When he's on it, you know, when he decides
and,
to.
And my handle to be determined.
That's
stay tuned on that by the next few days. In the meantime, we're going to leave.
In the meantime.
I'm going to leave. Elvis is leaving the building. I was going to offer people this.
I was going to say.
Okay, so back.
Buy a newspaper. Subscribe to KQED.
No, no. Back in 2003, somebody handed out these chocolate bars called the Budget Crunch Bar. And I was going to offer my colleagues one.
I don't know if you guys heard halfway through when I went, ew, that was in response to the 8-year-old chocolate bar.
9 years, actually.
Nine.
It's been in my office for 9 years, and it looks a little moldy.
So it's like three times as old as your kids?
Yeah.
Oh, you're doing
it. I just want people to hear it on the microphone there, and it dropped all over the floor.
Budget crunch. We're back. It's been 9 years. We're still in one.
Just like the budget. Just when you think you've got it under control, it just spills out all over the floor.
And that is the final word of this chapter of the Capital Notes podcast history. Marisa Lagos, thank you.
Thank you.
From the San Francisco Chronicle. Anthony York, the strange man who had to come 6 years running.
Yes. Thank you.
Not strange for you, but strange that I was able to con you into doing it all these years. No, really, thank you. You've been very good to offer analysis. I'm John Myers for now from KQED. Thank you very much, everyone. Stay tuned. We'll see you next time.